I'm Kier from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, the show where I think maybe we might sometimes talk about video games based on comics, but I've just had a lot of creators who wanted to talk about stuff lately. Today we're doing that again. I've got Frank Martin here. Frank, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Chris. And I'm a huge gamer, so I could talk about video games all day long if you feel like going off on a tangent.
Well, if nothing else, we'll get you on for a regular episode then.
Sounds good.
But we have you here today because you have a Kickstarter comic getting started in the next few weeks, days, something like that, depending on when this gets put out, called The Polar Paradox, right?
Correct. Yes.
So what is your elevator pitch trying to get people to read The Polar Paradox?
So Polar Paradox, a real simple premise, a group of scientists in the near future are on a expedition underneath, diving underneath Antarctica sea ice, and they're going to places nobody's ever been before, and they go missing. So a group of elite rescue divers has to go into this uncharted territory to kind of find them, and what they discover is a strange mystery that is about the few center of the Earth, pretty much, under Antarctica.
So I read through this thing again a little bit before we got on here to record, and I mean, this is something that I think is going to be a whole lot of fun when I can see like the second issue of it. I mean, the first issue is fun too, but I want to see the second one.
With a two-parter, you definitely got to leave on a heavy cliffhanger there, because you're going into the grand finale right at the end of the first issue.
This is the first thing I've read from you. This rescue team that you have going here in the series, is this characters that you've worked with before?
No. This is a brand new series, brand new characters. I'm like that. I typically, my projects have been small, you know, short stories, one shots. This is my first two-parter, which in the grand scheme of comics is still considered, you know, kind of small, not necessarily a mini series of three or four issues. But yeah, this is my first true sci-fi series too. And it's not even hard sci-fi, like space or robots or cloning or something like that. It's just rescue divers, but I gave it that near future element to it. So they got futuristic tech and kind of sci-fi gadgets on them. So yeah, it's something new for me, something a lot of fun.
And the reason I asked that was because the way this read at the beginning, there wasn't a lot of introduction on who they are or anything, which in this kind of story, I don't think you really need that kind of thing.
No, I mean, different stories definitely focus on different things. You got stories that are very theme heavy, you know, that are about something. You got stories that are very character heavy, that are character dramas and all about characterization. I think the main thing with this story is really the setting. You know, that's the driving factor that really moves the plot forward and is perilous to the characters. So in the first couple pages, it's really all set up. You meet them, you find out what their mission is, and then it just kind of, the wheels start spinning and we jump right into the adventure things pretty quickly.
What made you settle on this Antarctica setting?
So this story was inspired by a National Geographic article I read. I'm a pretty big National Geographic guy. I get a subscription. I read it cover to cover every month. And this one story really stood out to me, which is essentially was the premise of the book. Scientists were in Antarctica. They cut a hole in the ice and they went diving in a place that nobody's ever been before. And they took pictures of this strange alien world with all these alien weird plants and creatures that evolved on these weird trajectories. And I'm like, this is perfect for a comic setting, you know, for just an action adventure tale. So I kind of ripped it straight from there, and I just made the rescue divers that I, the scientists that I read about, go missing, and then the comic kind of wrote itself.
I think it's a really interesting choice for setting too, because it's not somewhere that a lot of people are going to be able to get to go.
No. I mean, if you look over media and film and TV, you find a lot of stories that kind of center around that setting. You got Sphere, you have stuff like The Abyss, or what's that new movie with Kristen Stewart? The Underwater, you know, where she's kind of attacked by monsters or whatever underwater. It's a great setting because it takes humans completely out of their element. You know, it's very similar to space in that way, in that we're not really meant to be there. But unlike space, this is in our own backyard. People go to the beach all the time, they swim in the ocean, and we've only explored 5% of it. So to think whatever is down at the other 95%, it's completely alien to us, it's completely unknown to us, and it's just a ripe area for storytelling.
So how long have you been working on this one?
This particular book, I think I've been working on for about 3 years, I want to say. My co-creator on the book is the illustrator, Antonio Mastria. We met at a local con here in New York. I was tabling. I think he was just attending. And he was walking by and he saw some of my other projects. And he said, hey, I'm an artist. Would you be up for working? And I said, sure, leave me your information. And we shot some emails back and forth. And we discussed about some ideas. And before you know it, we got a project that we're working on. And now we're ready to kind of show it to the world.
So when you write a story like this, how much direction are you giving your artists, and, you know, Antonio specifically in this case?
So this was a very artistic heavy story, especially in this issue. It's the polar paradox. The first issue, the second issue is about the paradox side of things. You know, it really gets into the plot more, but this first issue is all about the polar side. So it's really adventure. It's really about the setting, about the creatures that they encounter. So I didn't really give them a whole lot of direction. I mean, I took the screenshots from that National Geographic article that I read. I sent it over with him for inspiration. I told him how I kind of wanted some stuff to look like the submarine and their suits, but for the most part he came up with the designs all himself. I gave him some feedback, and he was really the driving factor, because as a comic writer, you just have to understand that you're not the main storyteller here. The illustrator is, and he did a phenomenal job, because it's really difficult kind of pushing a story forward underwater like that, especially in a setting that doesn't have any natural light, where you have to rely on things like the lights from the sub, or the lights from their suits, or the bioluminescence of creatures. It's kind of a tricky thing. So I kind of gave him free rein to kind of figure that out, and he did a really good job at pulling it off, at least I think.
I think he did too. I would love it if you guys would let me throw some screenshots up there, up in the show notes, because I mean, some of this stuff, people are just gonna have to see it.
Yeah, definitely. I got a whole bunch of pages on the Kickstarter page too, so people could see his designs and a lot of the colors that he threw in there, because these creatures, you know, they're something familiar to us, but at the same time, like I said, they kind of took off on their own path of evolution. So he had a lot of leeway to go crazy with some of the colors and some of the way they look.
Had you been planning this as a two-part thing, or is that just happened to be how long the story needed to be?
I think two-part, it didn't come from the story. We kind of had that in mind to begin with. We didn't want to do a one-shot. We wanted to do something a little longer. And at the same time, we didn't want to do 3 or 4 issues. We wanted to do something that was attainable, that we could kind of work on the side at our own leisure. But that didn't feel, the completion didn't feel so far in the future that it was going to take up a long time to complete. So we thought two parts was kind of that sweet spot.
And Kickstarter seems to be the natural thing for people to do with a comic like this. You know, make it, get it in people's hands. What are your plans for it beyond that?
Not much. Kickstarter's really been a boom for a lot of people. I go to Kickstarter not just to fulfill for the backers, but I like to do a small print run so that I have some books for conventions and signings whenever we really get back into the swim and things at the end. So I keep some stock to just put it up on my store, on my website, so that people could grab it then. Because there's always a handful of people that say, I missed the Kickstarter. This looks really cool. Can I grab it? But I would definitely be open to working with a publisher if they want to get in comic stores through that means. But for the most part, this is the Kickstarter is going to be the main way for people to pick it up, and then once I'm done with that, it's going to be on to the next. So I'm always moving.
Do you already know what your next thing is going to be, or are you just waiting for inspiration to strike again?
Yeah, you know, comic creating is funny because you these projects take so long to develop. So I have different things that have started different periods of time that are all kind of convalescing at the same time right now. So my plan is to have four launches this year on Kickstarter for three different projects. So Polar Paradox is one of them. That's going to take up two slots, part one and part two. And my next project will be in the spring, which is for a book called The Last Homicide, which is like a detective noir murder mystery, kind of, you know, one of those old school pulp stories.
One of the things I was really happy with, and we're getting this on here too, was that I've had a few people come on, you know, they've asked to be on, and then I never hear from them again. Which is weird.
Isn't that grand?
I know, like, I understand it a little bit if, you know, I'm talking to them and they say something and then they kind of fall off because it wasn't really their idea. But I've had people like you where, like, you asked me if you could come on the show. And then, you know, timing was weird. We pushed it off a little bit. And then you made sure to get back in contact with me. And, you know, I mean, first off, I'm just really excited that you wanted to come on the show enough to do that. But also, I mean, it really gives me a lot of faith in your Kickstarter because you're really being behind, you know, being on this show, I'm assuming you're going to do the same thing being on other shows and other places you're trying to promote the book as well.
I don't know if that shows professionalism or just me being anal and neurotic and just, I gotta get in contact with everybody, you know, but yeah, it's just, it's kind of part of the deal. It's weird when you get into a creative business. It's funny for everybody that's doing it now when we say it, but for somebody that's just starting out, we all tell them, look, the act of creating the actual thing is only going to be 20% of your time and your resources. The other 80% is going to be all the stuff else that comes with it, you know, marketing and worrying about printing and worrying about outreach and networking and PR and all that other stuff that comes with it. Just worrying about sales and calculating their numbers and legal stuff. So all that other stuff is part of the package of putting a comic together or putting any sort of creative business together. So you really got to dive headfirst into it. And a lot of people don't get up that learning curve. You know, they want to make a book and they think it's really cool. And then once they start to get in the process of, okay, I want to get it out there, it becomes a little bit daunting of the fact that there's so many other people doing this. And if you want to grab somebody's attention, it feels a lot of times like you're just screaming into the void. And you just got to keep hammering it home and keeping track of people that you email, like you mentioned, and knowing, I say my favorite tool during a Kickstarter is my calendar, you know, because that's how you keep track of everything, knowing when you're posting, who you're talking to at what dates. And so you really need to be organized for these types of things.
I mean, I really love that you mentioned the calendar too. I mean, you told me earlier when the Kickstarter is going, and when is the Kickstarter going? Because I forgot, because I wrote it down because I knew I'd forget.
I don't think I mentioned it. It's going to run from January 12th to February 2nd, which is 3 weeks.
So as we're recording this today, it's January 8th. which means I have plenty of time to get this edited. It might not come out before the Kickstarter starts, but it will definitely come out in the early parts of the Kickstarter, and you planned ahead well enough to do that.
Yeah, I reach out to people about a month and a half in advance is kind of my leeway, which, you know, it does aggravate some people. We're like, why are you talking to me so early? And I'm like, because people book up, you know, and I want to make sure I give them enough time so that I'm not bothering them, saying, can you squeeze me in? It launches in 3 days, you know, which sometimes it does happen. I do connect with people and I'm like, look, if you can make it happen, you can make it happen. If not, don't worry about it. And it especially gets tough with holidays and the end of the year, and especially with COVID. So everybody's super busy at the end of the year, and they just got to kind of keep following up on people and be understanding that they got other things going on in my life other than my silly comic book.
Well, that's why I make the Kickstarter last like 2 or 3 weeks long, because then you have time.
Yeah, so Kickstarter, it's all about filling that dead zone. You know, everybody's really happy at the beginning. It's launched, let me jump on board, and then everybody's really happy in the middle, or I should say at the end, when it's about to end. We gotta hurry up. We gotta jump on board. But that dead zone, that middle time, is really the stretch when you have to work and you gotta keep up momentum and keep up engagement. So anything that you can do to fill that kind of span is going to be important.
And honestly, I don't think it's ever too early to get booked. I have people booked for the show that aren't, I'm not even going to talk to them about it again for another 2 months. And we all know that, but they're lined up with their game. I know that their comic's coming out, and it's just too early to even talk about anything because so much can change in the world. So, you know, if nothing else, just having it lined up like we did is never a bad move.
No. Everybody's different. So, I mean, look, I can't, if somebody gets a little frustrated with me for saying that I want to book really far out, I can't really do anything about that. I'm just, would you rather me say I want to be booked in 2 months or 2 days? You know, it's, I guess everybody operates differently.
Well, I mean, I have had somebody ask me if I could get something out in 2 or 3 days because, you know, that was the first time they talked to me, and it's like, nope, sorry, can't happen.
I have some people that are my friends that I'm kind of, I talk to all the time. I'm on their shows or the live streams, and they'll hook me up. Those are kind of the only people that'll say, look, squeeze me in. I don't care if you got another guest who I'm friendly with. I'm just going to crash their party. But for somebody that I meet for the first time, those first impressions are everything. You want to be as professional as possible and say, look, I'm reaching out with what I believe is enough time to for you to fit me in.
And you definitely did that here.
Yeah. I've had some situations too that get a little frustrating where I say, look, my Kickstarter doesn't launch for a month and a half. Do you think we could schedule something? And they're like, yeah, no worries. Just message me like a week before. And I message them exactly a week before and they go, oh, I'm all booked up. I'm like, what? Like, okay. You know, I can't do anything about that, but just got rolled with the punches.
No, that's what bonus episodes released on the wrong day are for. You know, anybody who complains about having too much content is a little weird, if you ask me.
I'm not. That's your realm, not mine. I'm just here to talk.
I know you have this particular story planned as a two-part arc, but are you open to the idea of, you know, doing other stories, continuing with these people?
It's funny you should mention that. So, issue one ends on a pretty big cliffhanger. Issue two, I don't think ends on such a big cliffhanger, but it definitely leaves enough where I don't think readers are going to be 100% satisfied with the note that it ends on. So it ends on enough that it completes the arc, but there's definitely a possibility to continue it and wrap it up. And I've talked to Antonio about this. I said, look, the way it ends, we could definitely do a follow-up. Would you be interested in that? And he said, depends. So it's left in the air. The door is open. I actually have it plotted out. I have it all written out if he just wants to go ahead with it. And I'm hoping that this campaign and the campaign for part two, which will be in the summer, will be enough of a success that it will push him towards wanting to do that second arc that will definitely wrap up the story completely.
What kind of rewards are you guys getting set up for the Kickstarter?
So we have... we're going to have the standard issue with the standard cover that Antonio did. It's actually a connecting cover to part two. So he did like an ensemble two-page spread that he cut down the middle, and half would be for the issue one cover. The other half would be the issue two cover. And I think that it looks phenomenal. So I'm really pumped for that. I have a variant cover also that's available that people can grab. I'm going to have a set of prints that's part of the campaign. I also offer some commissions too with every campaign that I do. So Antonio, you can commission him to do a piece of original artwork for you. I do a story commission, which I always offer for my campaigns, that I always get one or two people grabbing that I could write a short story based on your idea, or kind of your premise. And original artwork is always original pages, I should say, are always popular for comic campaigns. Kickstarter does a Make 100 event in January. Are you familiar with that is?
Yes, I actually got in on one of those earlier today.
Yeah, so I always, whenever I launch in January, I always try to do something just to kind of take part in it. So for this particular campaign, what I'm going to do is a face mask for kind of sign of our times. And I took one of Antonio's scrap designs for the scuba gear. So it looks like kind of a scuba face mask when you put it on, like you're scuba diving, which I thought was unique. And that's my Make 100 item. That's only going to be 100 of them available. So I don't think I'm going to sell 100 of them, but if I sell one or two of them, I think that they're pretty cool. I got a kind of like a proof version so I could look at. And my son says I look like a Fallout character, which is interesting. And Kickstarter also has they're beta testing their add-on feature. So I have add-ons for some of my past sci-fi, some of the novels that I wrote and such.
How is this the first I'm hearing of that? Because I've definitely seen other creators doing add-on things, but they're always doing it through some other service besides Kickstarter.
Add-ons was something people for a long time have been pressuring Kickstarter to do something for. A lot of creators do it through like CrowdOx or BackerKit, one of those after programs or third-party things that handle fulfillment. And for my previous campaign in October, I really wanted to get in on this, on these add-ons, especially after convention season was done. I have so much stock and stuff that I want to get rid of, and I thought add-ons would be kind of a simple way to at least alleviate some of that. And I was so they ask you if you want to be a part of their kind of beta testing for add-ons, and I'm like every single week I'm kind of like applying. I'm sick because I really wanted to do it. And then 2 days before I launched in October, they kind of opened up the floodgates a little bit, and I was one of the first people to get in. So I scrambled really quick before I launched and put a whole bunch of add-ons on there. And it's not a perfect system yet. They still have a little bit of kinks, but I think it's pretty cool. The way it works is you select your rewards here, and then it takes you to a page where you confirm that pledge, and then they basically list a whole bunch of items that you could click on and add to it, which is, it's simple, it's seamless, and I'm super stoked for it. I hope they really roll it out officially and implement it properly into the system.
I mean, that seems like a real easy way to clean up a lot of the things that I've looked at that have like 5,000 different reward tiers.
Yeah, especially for my last campaign that had, I had four different covers. I had a standard version, two variants, and then I had a holofoil version of the standard. So it's cool that you could just put the covers in the add-on menu, and then people could kind of a la carte make their own reward tiers based on what they want. So it really simplified things, because the way people were doing it before, they're like, just if you want this cover, it's $5, just add it to your pledge and then message me what you want. And that's kind of a hokey way of doing things. It's really hard to keep track. So I think this makes it easier.
Yeah, I've seen like almost a 50-50 split between that and, yes, here's like 12 different reward tiers that are, you know, they're all the same except for a different cover.
Yeah. A lot of people. I don't go crazy with my variants. I think that they're fun, and but some people just have like 25 different covers, and then some of them are just super simple. Like it's the same exact cover except she's in a blue outfit instead of a red one. So it's just another way to make the fulfillment that much more complicated.
Well, I appreciate your simplicity here.
I try to keep it simple.
So I'm assuming that what I saw over here was the regular cover, because that's usually how it works out.
Yes, that is the regular cover. The variant cover is let me see if I can just pull it up. The variant cover it focuses on the squid and the submarine. Obviously, people aren't going to be able to see it.
Okay, I think that's the one I'm going to end up getting.
He colored it. I don't know why. I just have a black and white version here.
Is Antonio somebody you think you could keep working with in the future, or would you want to go work with other artists as well?
I mean, I like bouncing around. I like working with different people just to kind of get different experiences. But I wouldn't mind working with him again. I write so much that it's kind of not like I want to save stories for people. I'll write anything. I'm constantly writing, and he was fairly simplistic to work with. Simple. We had a kind of good rapport, a good way of just bouncing things back and forth off of each other. So definitely I would be open to working with other projects with him and developing more stuff from scratch.
Do you generally work with the artists and having them be a co-creator with stuff, as opposed to just paying them to do your thing and, you know, they do it and that's it?
No. I've done a handful of projects where I'm partnering with artists. A lot of times when I do that, I'll ask them what they want to draw, because that just makes things so much easier. I'm into everything, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, crime, horror. So I'll do everything. I have real no preference what I want to lean towards. So if an artist says, I really want to do a pirate story, I'm just like, down, we're done. Let's just do a pirate story. So, but I would say the majority of stuff, maybe 75% of the stuff I do is me bringing an artist on board to hire and work on a project that I developed on spec.
All right, and do you have any advice for people wanting to get into writing comics, or just writing in general?
Writing in general, the answer is to kind of write, you know? People spend a lot of time thinking about writing and not a lot of time actually writing. And the big saying that a lot of people use is you can't edit a blank page. So stop staring at it, you know, just put something down. Even if it's bad, bad writing is better than no writing at all. So you can always edit it later. You can always have somebody critique it and tear it apart. But that's kind of how you learn. And the other way you learn is by reading, you know, read if you want to learn how to write a novel, read a novel of and something that interests you and kind of see how that author, don't read it as a reader, you know, read it as an author that is critiquing somebody else's writing, and you can learn how their voice works and how they sentence structure and all that stuff. And same thing goes for comics, you know. Don't if you're reading comics and you want to read it as kind of an analytical comic creator, don't just blow through it. Look at the page. Look at how the story flows from left to right. Look at where the lettering is placed. Look at backgrounds and look at how the artist kind of positions characters so that the scene really flows. There's so much technicality that goes into it that you really don't think about unless you've actually done the work and made a comic yourself.
I'm feeling called out on having an idea and not actually writing it.
I think everybody is prone to come up with ideas and stories all the time, and it's daunting a lot when, especially writing a novel, because it's such a time constraint. But you get a little bit at a time, and after a while, before you know it, you have 60,000 words done and you got yourself a novel. So just do it, man. Nobody's going to give you permission.
and yet somehow I keep finding ways to delay working on it.
I think my fear of not writing outweighs any other possible fear that I could have, you know? So every I could have a million people telling me that it's the worst thing that I've ever created, but if I didn't create it, I think I would feel 10 times worse. So
well, I feel like I say this every time, but you're making me want to go work on my thing. God, and then of course I'm gonna get caught up talking to people about their stuff.
No, find some me time.
Well, that might be how we have to end things there, because I need to write. But Frank, it's been great talking to you about this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
I'm real simple. I'm Frank the Writer. So my website is frankthewriter.com. You can sign up for my mailings there. I got a bunch of free short stories and comics out there if you want to check out some stuff. Also, Frank the Writer is all my handles on social media. So Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm at Frank the Writer.
Obviously, we'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, including a link to the Kickstarter. You know, it's a little hard to tell you guys what the link to the Kickstarter is before Kickstarter happens. But we'll pretend that we have the link now, because this is the past.
Well, Polar Paradox, I think that is going to be the only thing on Kickstarter with that title. So if you really want to find it that badly, you can search for it. I'm sure it'll pop right up.
And if nothing else, check the show notes here, because there will be a link. And as always, if you want to find me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast, or just head on over to PlayComics.com, where if you have a thing you want to talk to me about on the show that you're creating, you know, just find, you know, email me, Chris@PlayComics.com. Get in touch with me on Twitter. Do whatever you got to do, because I love talking to creators about their cool stuff, or getting people on to talk about the games for the regular episodes. And especially when I get a creator on to talk about their stuff who then says, man, I'm going to need to come on for a regular episode because this was fun.
Absolutely. I'm a gaming fanatic, much to my wife's detriment.
Oh, she'll get over it.
She hasn't in 16 years, so...
If you want to hear some more wonderfully geeky shows, you can head on over to GunnaGeek.com and check out some of the shows over there. And if you like the music that we're really talking on top of right now, head on over to SoundCloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just go online, find some creators making cool stuff, and give them your money so that they'll want to create more things. And actually be able to support themselves a little bit while they do it. Sorry, one of my contacts was going weird.
Just kind of wondering what was going on there.
No, it's the joys of being awake since 4:30.